You're listening to the Light Novel Podcast. Visit us online at lightnovelpodcast.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Light Novel Podcast. We're actually bringing this one a lot earlier than usual because Anime New York City just occurred not too long ago, and we want to cover all of the light novel announcements that came out of there, and hoo boy, there's quite a few of them. And actually, what's really funny is there's quite a number of them, and Seven Seas did not go there and announce anything, so that's kind of interesting. Anyway, so with me tonight, I've got most of the gang, not all of them. Bio Gundam is here.
Me, an intellectual. Booso!
Jean-Luc is here.
Good evening.
Kyle is here.
Hola.
Oh my God, Kyle, it's been so long since I've heard hola. We have Mirage here.
Nothing like a recording session at 3 in the morning.
Hey, I once got up at 4 a.m. to record a podcast.
Well, there you go. See, he's got you beat by an hour, though, Bio. And we have Terrence.
Yo.
There we go. And so we're going to go through a whole bunch of these licenses. But first, some other news. I mean, this is kind of an entire news podcast this time around, but a couple of other non-licensee type things. First off, and just a little anecdotal, interesting kind of thing, Fortune Quest, which is a light novel series, it is having its final volume released after 30 years this series has been running. The series centers on Pastel, a young adventurer who goes on various quests with her colorful party members in search of adventure and fortune. The first series had 8 volumes that ran from 1989 to 1993, and then the second series, which was Shin Fortune Quest, ran for 20 volumes from 1994 to 2012, and now the current series, which is Shin Fortune Quest 2, started in 2013, is going to be finishing up this, I guess, in 2020, because I think they said the 10th volume is being released as a part 1, part 2. Part 1's coming out, I think, in December. Part 2 will be out sometime next year. So, 30-year run for this series, and it's not one of those series that, you know, took a 20-year hiatus in between. It actually has legitimately been running for 30 years. So, I thought that was kind of cool. It did actually have an OVA back in 1993 and a 26-episode anime series in 1997. So, this is probably one of those earlier series that led the way of light novels and getting anime adaptations and all that kind of jazz.
This series sounds like it is quite a bit of a vintage and quite a bit of a legacy. Like, I'm just going to check out this anime.
Wait, check out the covers. Like, the covers, it's awesome. They are, like, so 1980s, 1990s anime. Like, they're awesome.
I'm looking up right now. It came up, Fortune Quest.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Right? Yeah.
That's vintage.
It looks even more retro than like Sorcerer Stab or Orphan.
Oh, why have I never heard of this? Okay, I'm going to pay this to my watch list. This sounds amazing.
So, it's pretty cool. And like I said, it's just kind of neat. It's a 30-year running series, and it's been running consistently for that 30 years. It's not been like, 10 years between and stuff like that we're kind of seeing nowadays, right?
Yeah, if only the writer from Berserk could take notes from this guy.
The art style reminds me a bit of Slayers, but...
Yeah, it would. It's sort of the same era, yeah. It probably would. I actually think that I'd have to double check, but I think I saw somewhere that the author is actually a female too, which is kind of cool. Next up, Bishonen Tanteidan gets an anime. That is Pretty Boy Detective Club. This is a series that's written by Nishio Ishin, and we won't say much about it because we're actually going to be talking about it in a little while. But let's just say that the anime announcement makes a certain license all the much clearer as to why it happened.
It's written by Nishio Ishin. Of course it's going to get licensed.
Well, but Nishio Ishin's got other titles that aren't licensed. In fact, I know a lot of people were thinking that that Forgetful Detective one that he's written, where about the detective who she only can retain memories for like 24 hours. A lot of people thought that was going to get licensed, but no, this one did, and now we know why of the Nishio Ishin titles this
yeah,
one
I,
did.
Yeah, I have a theory that they have like a little dartboard and they just like throw darts for what book's going to get licensed next. It's like, that one.
Well, most of his stuff is tied into stuff that has an anime adaptation, right? So, it's yeah. Anyway, and then finally, Kaifuku Jutsushi no Yarinaushi, or Redo of a Healer light novel series, is getting an anime. So the revenge fantasy story centers on K.R., a healer who is used and tossed around by his fellow adventurers on the assumption that healers cannot fight on their own. However, when he achieves the ultimate healing magic and heals the world itself, he goes back 4 years to redo his life. And folks, this is not like a redo your life, like let's make things so much better for myself and let's be a better person. No, this is let us rape the people that mistreated me, let us drug them, let us murder them, let us
By the way, audience, this series is a lot more boring than it sounds, all right? I read like the manga and I was like, snore. Like, I thought this was gonna be cool and edgy, and it's just really, really boring and dull.
Well, it's
I second the motion. It's not that interesting.
Oh, I don't think
Hajime from Fueta is more entertaining than this guy.
So look forward to this being another one of those titles that makes people think light novels are garbage. So when they see the anime, that'll be something to yay look forward to.
And like there's something that I've been wondering, like for anyone that played like either an RPG, like a tabletop one or an MMORPG or any type of board game where you have an healer, like you don't mistreat your healer. Like it's the number one rule. You don't mistreat your healer if you want to survive.
Yeah, especially clerics have access to a lot of fucking powerful spells, like and so do paladins, like Divine Smite and what's that one spell that clerics can get that stops you from dying? Is it Turn the Dead or something?
Spare the dying.
Yeah, spare the dying. Yeah, moral of the story, do not piss off your paladins or your clerics or your druids.
Everyone who's ever played World of Warcraft knows that if you don't provide your healer with enough cookies, you die.
but Mirage, make sure you do not give them the third biscuit, because the third biscuit's immoral because it leads to the fourth biscuit.
Oh, jeez.
I usually give them 3 or 4 stacks.
I totally agree with you. Even the setup, I was like, seriously, nobody mistreats their healer. That's dumb. But
Like the healer is your best friend.
Yeah. So, but yes, it's not a title that we will ever cover on this podcast, even if it does get licensed.
I am not going to touch. I'm not touching with a 5-foot pole. I read the manga. I found it incredibly boring. And no.
Yeah. Not one that we're going to worry
about. I'll pass on this one, Ed. Also.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Okay. So that's it. There's nothing else to discuss outside of the licenses that came out of Anime New York City, so we'll jump right ahead. We'll do it by publisher, and we'll do sort of the... we'll do Square Enix, then Vertical, then Yenon, and then J-Novel Club, because that's pretty much in order of the number of titles that these publishers are licensing. First up, we've got Square Enix, which is going to be Nier Automata, Yorha Boys. This is kind of interesting because I guess Yenon had licensed the Nier Automata books beforehand, but I guess that was before Square Enix officially came out into the English market to publish their own stuff. This one is actually a prequel to the Nier Automata games, focusing on a sort of group of male droids and that are somewhat experimental. And yes, the one male droid from the game is part of the group. So if you were a big fan of the games and perhaps even the novels, this might be one to check out. I don't know. Does anybody else have anything to say about this one?
Not really.
No? Okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if you do, Kyle, go ahead.
Well, no, all I was really going to say was that the Nier Automata has just tons and tons of lore, stage plays, books, albums, all kinds of things. I'm not too familiar with this one specifically, but there is a lot to unpack.
There's also a fuck ton of hentai that's pretty hot as well.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Bio, we can always count on you.
The hentai expert has spoken.
I'm not an expert. I'm more of a hobbyist.
You don't even have to be an expert. Even if you just Google Nier Automata, you know that there's a lot of hentai of it. It's just there's no way around it. Half the Twitter accounts for artists, you know, it's just, yeah. Anyway, I mean, it is kind of funny that it has become a huge game. And yeah, you're right, Kyle. It's got almost terrible amounts of lore behind it. So, okay, so that was it. That's all Square Enix announced in terms of novels. They're clearly still focusing very heavily on their manga. And honestly, they don't really have a ton of light novels, I think, in their roster anyway. So I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of that kind of stuff from them. Okay, up next, we've got Vertical. And as promised, I said we were going to talk about the Bishonen Tantaiten Pretty Boy Detective Club series because, yep, you guessed it. That was licensed by Vertical. I don't have this in my list. Mirage, was this not in the list?
Because I didn't know that was one of the licenses from Anime NYC.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's all good.
I know it confused a lot of people because I think the manga was already announced or something a few months back.
What happened was one of the things that screwed everybody up was that they showed the slide and it's the light novel cover and they mentioned just like Nishi Oishin, who's the author and everything else. But then it was labeled with Vertical, so it's not over under Kodansha's line, but then when they tweeted it out, they hashtagged it with manga, whereas their other novels, they had hashtagged novel or light novel, whatever.
Yeah,
right? So people were confused, yeah. But it is definitely the actual light novels that are coming out.
So I just wanted to mention really quickly, somebody posted a link to their, I think it was Kodansha's, page about the announcements, and on Kodansha's page they mentioned the manga is coming in the fall. I don't know if that is true, that the manga is coming in the fall, but didn't mention anything about the light novel in the announcement. So again, they're kind of trying to confuse you a little bit, I think.
I think this is the problem when you Vertical is kind of like the Nishi Oishin publisher. They've got Monogatari, they've got Katanagatari, they've got the Ziari Goto series. So they publish a lot of Nishi Oishin. They've kind of become the go-to for his stuff. I think really the only stuff other than that that's been published was the Death Note book that he wrote and Juni Taisen. But nonetheless, so the first novel story begins with protagonist Mayumi Dojima, a troubled middle schooler at Yubiwa Academy. Mayumi meets and ends up employing the handsome detectives, five handsome but eccentric boys rumored to solve problems and mysteries at the school through an unofficial non-profit group. So it's more Nishi Oishin doing mystery, quote-unquote mystery.
What I read is that the girl is looking for a star. I'm not sure what to expect from that. Maybe she's an astronomer. but somehow I doubt it.
I mean, Nisho Ishin, his stuff is all so quirky, right? I mean, Zarigoto starts off as like a quote-unquote mystery series, and then I just read and reviewed Volume 3, and it's very clear that it's morphing into something quite different than being just a mystery type series.
I mean, wasn't Monogatari about like kind of like that as well? Like because originally when it starts out, it's like, oh, you know, girls with different problems and yada 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 yada, and then it evolves into different shit where it's just shit happens. It doesn't even involve girls.
There is definitely evolution in Monogatari as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Isn't like a new series like Aragi at college having to deal still with his vampirism or something?
I don't know.
That's what I saw on the wiki. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean,
well, oh yeah, because he did. So okay, well, I mean, we're kind of going off topic, but yeah, Monogatari. I know Nisho Ishin currently Vertical is publishing what was supposed to be the last season, and then Nisho Ishin did a couple of side books that were, you know, just all over the place. And now, yes, in Japan, he has started a new season, which I think you're right. It deals with Araragi when he's older. So, but I don't know the exact details of it.
I think it's him in college with Kiss Shot and yada yada.
Maybe. I don't know. I even heard that some of them, I don't know if there's a book, if it's a side story or not, but I read one where it's supposedly he's an adult. I don't know. In any case, so Pretty Boy Detective Club. Well, coming out from Vertical from Nisho Ishin, so if you're a Nisho Ishin fan, definitely check it out. And like I said, there is the anime coming, so not too shocking that this of the Nisho Ishin titles got licensed this time around. Okay, so now we can move on to Yen On. They announced a couple of titles. We'll leave the one that I know Bio will have the most to say about until the end. which, I mean, honestly, is probably the biggest announcement that they made anyway, so, you know, might as well save the big one for the end. First off, we'll talk about High School Prodigies Have It Easy, Even in Another World. This one is an isekai fantasy type series. There's currently 9 volumes out in Japan. It is still an ongoing series. There is a manga as well, which... did Yen Press also get that
one?
Yeah,
it's been releasing. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so, because I know that's where they screwed up, too. Yen had the, I think they had the, in their announcement on Twitter, there was something about,
yes,
they had hashtagged it manga or something, and they're like, oh, no, we've already done the manga, this is the light novel. Or they put the wrong cover, or...
It says hashtag manga.
Okay, yeah, so 7 Japanese high school students enjoy international renown for their remarkable talents. One day, these friends survive a plane crash, only to find themselves in the medieval fantasy world of Freyjargard, where 2 human races live side by side in a feudal society. The Byuma, who have animal features and formidable strength, and the Hayuma, who have a small chance of magical aptitude. After being rescued by the Byuma Winona and her adopted elven daughter Riruru, the group pledges to use their advanced skills and knowledge to pay the people of Elm Village back for their hospitality and to find a way to return back home. Tsukasa Mikogami, the Prime Minister of Japan, acts as the leader of these young geniuses and organizes their efforts to intervene in Freyjargard and gather the information and resources necessary for achieving their goals. Believing that there is a connection between their current situation and an ancient legend about 7 heroes from another world who defeated an evil dragon, Tsukasa directs the others to learn about the culture around them and search for any clues leading them back to Earth, but he also gives them another instruction: to take it nice and easy, lest they ruin this world by giving it their all. I haven't skipped out. There is an anime for this one. I think we were saying that's in its second season now, like its second core. Is that correct?
No, it's the first one.
Oh, is it still the first core? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is going to be a second, but...
Okay, so, I knew the anime was recent. I didn't know if it was a second core or if it had only finished its first one. So, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like an isekai with overpowered characters again.
Yes.
Well, if one OP character is not enough, about 7.
I mean, that's definitely different.
Yeah, basically they are seven, and everyone is overpowered in their own special field. One is an overpowered swordsman.
There's a lot of different, like, they all have very different, like, skill sets and backgrounds.
Yeah.
I think, like, some of them are, like, samurais and ninjas, which are kind of similar. But then there's, like,
One of them is a politician,
yeah.
One of them is a merchant, one of them is a doctor, one of them is a magician, one of them is a... technician,
yeah,
or
and the technician is like working on like
yeah.
space shuttles or something, right? Like
in the prologue, yes, but what she turns out in the fantasy world is insane as well. It's like surface to air missiles and power plants and stuff.
Oh my lord! Okay, all right, well. Okay, so basically, instead of one hero who is OP across the board, we have seven people that are gifted in various fields, and so it's how they collectively start altering this world because they're just that good.
Yeah.
Okay,
and I don't think it's a. I mean, I want to hesitate because I haven't read it yet, but I don't think it's a harem. I mean, there are at least two male characters in the plot, like that are of the seven, so. It's got a little bit of balance.
But one of them is a little boy.
Mm.
And for the main character, there are at least two girls who are interested in him. Mm. In him.
That's not
so
a harem.
So far, I wouldn't consider
that's
it a
harem.
That's
a love triangle mirage.
Yeah, triangles don't count as
and
harems.
That's only hinted at so far. It's not a main plot point.
Oh, well, then it's not even a thing, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's fine.
It's quite entertaining so far,
okay.
As long as you don't take it too seriously. So,
well, I was going to say, is it more of a comedy then?
Yes.
Okay.
The powers are so over the top. The doctor basically saves one person whose guts are hanging out from a attacked by a wild beast with just a needle in her bare hands, and
okay.
That's not
right.
really something you can take
going.
Too seriously.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Next up from Yen On, we had the Demon Sword Master of Excalibur Academy. This one has two volumes currently in Japan. One of the most powerful demon lords ever has been sealed away for 1,000 years. When he finally awakens, he is reincarnated as a 10-year-old boy? Now, under the care of the girl who released him, the demon lord Leonis must navigate the perils of Excalibur Academy.
Ara, ara.
So it's a high school magical power fantasy, I'm guessing?
Probably. It's basically the same summary as for at least two or three other series I know.
I know. it doesn't sound like it's got a whole lot of
what was the name? The Greatest Mao is reincarnated to have friends or something like that? That sounds exactly like that one.
It sounds very similar, yeah.
Yeah, there was one other.
But I think, there's a couple that are like that. I don't know. We'll see. next up, we'll move along then. Next up, we have Banished from the Hero's Party. I decided to live a quiet life in the countryside. This one has five volumes currently in Japan. It is an ongoing series. In a fantasy world in which a young girl with the divine protection of the hero battles against the demon lord. In that world, Red, the elder brother of the young girl, possessing the divine protection of the guide, which basically just allows him to have a high initial level, fought in the initial party of the hero. However, with a divine protection that only grants a high level, but no magic, nor martial arts, nor supernatural ability, he gradually could no longer keep up with the battle, and in the end, one of the other companions, a sage, remarked, "You are not a true companion," snatching all of his equipments and kicked him out of the party, leaving him with just a single copper sword. Having his heart completely shattered, Red distances himself from the battle against the Demon Lord's army, despite knowing that the fate of the world rests on it. Instead, he decides to aim to live in an inconspicuous life alone at the frontier Zoltan as he earns money to open a herbalist shop by utilizing the knowledge he acquired throughout his journey. Together with the half-elf carpenter living downtown and the princess who couldn't become the hero's companion, he aims to live a slow life in the frontier of the world governed by a person's inborn divine protection.
Yeah.
Yeah, so okay. That's a mouthful.
So it's
yeah, a little bit.
Another...
After that, does Red goes out on a journey to gather every Pokemon ever?
Not sure. I think I remember it being on the top 10.
Yes.
A few times last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of times.
This was on the Bookwalker. I think this was number one on some Bookwalker vote too. So yeah, this one's pretty popular.
Oh. Oh yeah, it's
might be good then.
Yeah, well, it's again, it's a very slow life type thing. As far as I understand it, it is. Well, I don't want to get into spoilers. I won't get into spoilers with it. Never mind.
But you know, I know you always talk about this Justice, these slow life series where some guy gets kicked out of the party. He's got no magical talent. You know, he's totally useless. And you know, I'm sure in the future he'll find some talent that he's very useful at, some god gift in the future. We'll see.
Well, I mean, okay, I will say this, that maybe it becomes that,
yeah.
But from what people told me when it was in the top 10, because I wondered that same thing out loud when I talked about it, from what people told me and from what I think there is a manga of this one as well. From what I gather, so far, no, not the case. This is literally about a dude settling down.
All right, I'm interested.
But we'll see. Yeah, I mean, like you said, it sold very well. Every time a new volume came out, it was in the top 10 sales for that week. So it'll be interesting to see how it does and what it is like. All right. So next up from Yanon, and wow, this is going to sound like the most generic description ever. This one's called In the Land of Leedale. Due to an accident, half of Kagame Kena's body was paralyzed. One day, because of a power outage, she regrettably died. But just before that, she was moved to the world of the online game she was playing. When she woke up, she was in the game. But it was 200 years in the future. Well, for the time being, in order to survive, I should probably do something. In the world that was a video game, who stands in the way of the fumbling girl making her way through it?
That's all they give you.
So basically, it's another... someone got transported to their VR MMO.
Yeah.
And the summary doesn't tell us anything beyond that, so...
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly. The artwork for it, though, looks lovely. Like, the covers look beautiful.
Yeah, I just posted those on the Discord, too.
Yeah, like, the covers are beautiful. That was one of the... It's one of those things when, you know, you read a series, when you take a look at a series. Actually, when this one premiered, it premiered in the top 10. So it's first volume. So again, I don't know what I'm guessing is because of the artwork, because the story, the synopsis sounds generic, is like, oh my god, but the cover is just like, holy crow, somebody invested some time and effort into that.
Yeah,
so.
But you should never judge a book by its cover, and we'll get to that when we get to the JMT licenses.
Well, fair enough.
So it does look like it's going to be a little comedic, too. Like, I posted that one picture of her kicking some demon bear's stomach, and his eyes are, like, bulging out. Like, it does look like it's going to be a little bit on the comedy side. But, yeah, we'll find out.
The summary says something about the girl being fumbling, so maybe she's a bit clumsy. Which would also be nice.
Well, I kind of wonder, because it doesn't really, it says, you know, half of her body was paralyzed. So she actually in our world was severely ill and paralyzed and everything else. And I believe that's why she was the setup. I think somebody had told me that was kind of the setup, was that was why she was into the VR MMO, because she couldn't move. So being able to play the game kind of gave her something to do. So maybe, you know, because she's now reincarnated and healthy, you know, maybe that's the shtick of it. I have no idea.
Yeah.
There's three volumes currently out in Japan. It is still an ongoing series. All right. Next up from Yen On, we have, this one's just a one-shot novel, and it is called 3 Days of Happiness. So like I said, it's just a single novel. This one is, the premise of it is that there is this guy who, I'm not going to read the little blurb that we have here because it really tells you nothing. basically, the gist of it is that this dude is down on his luck. He is basically selling off everything that he owns because he's so in debt and he's so down on his luck. And a couple of these people that he's pawning his stuff off to, they say to him, hey, you know, there's a shop that will actually pay you for time of your life, like how much longer you have to live. And he's like, what the heck? So he goes, checks this out because he's so desperate, and they evaluate him, and they're basically like, yeah, each year of your life is only worth $100. So he says, you know what, this sucks. He just sells the whole thing, except in the Wikipedia it said 3 months, but I think based on the title it's 3 days. Basically, he gives himself, like, no time, and he just decides to live it up and make the best of what he has left. And that's the book. So, yeah. It came back, and it came out back in 2013, so this has taken a while. Is the author somebody that we've heard from before? I didn't look that up.
Subaru Miyake. No, never heard of it.
Yeah, I don't think he's had... I don't know if it's a he or she, but I don't think they've had anything stateside yet. I think this is their debut stateside, I think.
Sounds a bit depressing to me.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I just looked this person up on Novel Updates. It's their titles of their books are Your Story, Parasite in Love, The Place You Called From, Pain, Pain, Go Away, Starting Over. Yes, this sounds like a person who's writes stuff that's all kind of that. Maybe they should get together with Makoto Shinkai.
Yeah.
How do you know it's not Makoto Shinkai under a different name?
I don't know. Or it could be, or the same dude who wrote I Want to Eat Your Pancreas, because sounds like it's sort of in the same vein. Maybe that's kind of where we're going now with some of these licenses, that sort of angsty, reevaluate your life, find your purpose, yada, 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 all that good stuff. From there, from discovering your purpose and having no value to your life, we go to Oppai!
I, who is about to awaken, and the Red Dragon Emperor, who holds the truth of the King up high, holding the infinite hopes and unbreakable dreams and walking the path of righteousness, I will become the Emperor of Crimson Dragon, and I shall lead you all to a path of heaven glowing in deep crimson light. But fuck that shit, I want to become the Harem King! Boosto!
No singing the Popeye song? I'm disappointed.
Oh God. Alright, let me find it.
No, we've already made, you know what, our rendition of A Sister's All You Need made this podcast cringy enough. I don't think we need to sing the Oppai song. Okay, so yeah, High School DxD or High School DD.
Oh, I found the song. Do you want me to do it?
No, I don't.
Can I at least do one thing?
What?
Click, click, zoom, zoom, Nyan.
Okay.
Yeah, so High School DxD or High School DD. I never know whether we're supposed to pronounce the X or not.
People just call it High School DxD.
Yeah, I know. So I'm guessing it's
DxD. Yeah, they explain. Yeah, well, yeah. So
yeah, we don't get too far ahead. Because this one, this one obviously has had numerous anime seasons. It is definitely an eshi title. The fact that we have mentioned breasts several times is not because, you know, You know, it's because literally Issei, who is the main character, is absolutely obsessed with breasts, and it just goes on and on. Essentially, the story is about a high school boy who is a pervert and likes breasts. I've made that pretty apparent. Who finally gets to go out on a date with a really cute girl, and then she kills him. But he finds himself revived. Yeah, that,
it was some very intense foreplay.
It escalated very quickly. And then he finds himself revived by one of his senpais, who it turns out she is a devil, and she has now turned him into a demon to be her servant. And then many, 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 many things happen, like battling gods, demons, angels, you name it.
Like, do you want me to, there's like this series, like on the surface, you'd think it's like, oh, it's an etchy, it's trash and blah, blah, blah. But like really this series, there's a lot, there's so much shit we could cover. Like this series is like, it's an amalgamation of all the shit. And it shouldn't work, but it does. It's got, like, it's like a tokusatsu, ecchi. It has, like, oh, my nakama and bro and friendship power-ups. You've got, like, it's like Kamen Rider. and his godlet is an actual character. Like, it talks, and he can turn into suits. And there's, like, every single, like, religion and mythology, it exists, it's real. You meet gods, there's yokai, there's demons, you meet Saint Michael, there's angels, there's fallen angels. Also, Azrael is a fucking madman, which... Lucifer's... you've got Lucifer, you've got Odin, you've got Zeus, you've got Hades, you've got Apollo, who's the fucking...
Okay.
Jupiter, you've got Jupiter, you've got Vishnu...
So
basically that matchy with more breath.
It's so fucking good, man.
The anime seasons. I thought the first two were okay. They got progressively worse after that, but that might be due to just
good. I mean, the series has like when the series is serious, it is actually serious, and there's like some really good like character development. And by the way, they dive into all the backstories of all the characters, like even the members of like Issei's harem. And maybe the few of the guys that may have a crush on him, we don't know. That's a bit ambiguous at this point. But they all go into their backstories, and all of them are interesting and cool.
Well,
and
they've had time to do it because the series has 25 volumes. Now, technically, it's complete, but not exactly because there is now true high school DxD or Shin High School.
There's also
DxD,
the side stories.
There's also another
book that takes place in the same universe. And by the way, that character shows up as well in High School DxD. Was it Slash Dog? Yes, Slash Dog. By the way, Slash Dog is fucking awesome. what read Slash Dog? It's got Vali, who's like, he's like a villain, but also like a good guy, bad guy, kind of. He's also like the great-grandson of Lucifer, so... And he's got a dragon. He's got like a white dragon that fucking turned into a suit of armor as well. It's fucking awesome.
Okay, so to all the listeners, you can clearly tell which of all of these titles Gundam is most excited about.
Oh, well, I've only read like most of the side stories, all the main series, and I'm reading True High School DxD. And by the way, like, it's like, oh, it's... We need to do a podcast on it sometime. It's just so like, I wish I had enough time to talk about it all, but it's like, well, there's so much to fucking cover, like from the characters, the story, and some of the stuff that happens, how the world works, what the sacred gears are, how the demons work, how the angels work, how all the shit works, and the character relationships and all the powers. Oh, it's just, oh, it's amazing.
So, dear viewers, look forward to a podcast on High School DxD probably in the next year or so, when they've at least released the first, say, two or three books, because we can't obviously talk about just one. Bio's going to spoil the whole damn series for us.
Hey, fuck you, it's amazing.
Hey, I didn't say it wasn't. I just said that.
Like, we should at least do the first. We should do like the first like four volumes, because like the third volume has a great fucking character arc with Kiba. His name's Kiba. Like, they have an amazing character arc with him. The fourth volume is amazing. We learn more about like Arcano and stuff, and it's just amazing.
Then it's great. It'll probably be a little while, because Yen On typically releases only like what tops 3 volumes a year in a particular series, which means it's going to take them, what, 8 years to release this series?
When is the
and
first...
And it's still ongoing, so...
When is the first volume due? Did they give a release date?
No, they haven't announced any of that. Okay. Yeah, they're not like Seven Seas. Seven Seas, when they license something, they're like, yeah, this book's coming out June 2020 and all this. Yenon never does that. It doesn't matter anyway, because even when they announce when it's going to release it, they usually delay it by at least a month or two anyway. Yeah, they're pretty infamous for their delays. Given the typical timeline of Yen On's releases, you probably will not see this release until around August or September, because they usually start releasing things about 8 months or so after they announce them. So,
fuck!
So look forward to the podcast on High School DxD in 2021. all right. See, we're already... Look at us planning ahead over a year in advance. Okay. All right. So next... so that was it for Yen.
Should we mention it? Restaurant to Another World manga. That license. Just mention it really quickly. That's it.
Nah, okay. I wasn't going to worry about any manga adaptations. I got licensed, whatever. I have become a true light novel snob. I don't care about manga. Manga is the fake version. No, I'm just kidding.
There was one more thing that I wasn't sure if I should consider it a light novel. That was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the...
Oh, that's J-novel.
That's J-novel, dude.
That was J-novel? Okay.
Yep, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
All right, so... Speaking of J-Novel Club, let's talk about J-Novel Club. And dear God, they announced a lot of stuff. There's a lot to talk about for J-Novel Club. First of all, we'll talk about the really quick stuff. My Next Life as a Villainess, All Roads Lead to Doom, and Sexiled are both coming out in print. So J-Novel Club announced those really quick. My Next Life as a Villainess, not really a big surprise, considering there is an anime coming for that one. And Sexiled, I'm guessing, is just, I guess it has done very well for them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because they don't really share their sales, but...
It's been really high up on all of the sales charts. Like, I know on Bookwalker it's been high up, and I'm pretty sure on Amazon it was early on, too.
All right. So, those two are coming out in print. I mean, we... talked about those previously, so we won't get into too much detail about them. So we'll get right into the actual licenses of new titles that are coming out, and a bunch of these are actually being released under a new imprint that J-Novel Club is doing, and we'll talk about that in a little while. First off, what they licensed was a title called Teagonia. This one has 3 volumes, it's still ongoing. It's a fantasy series, and is it an isekai? I believe it is.
Yes, it is.
In the harsh region known as the Borderlands, humans must fight an endless battle against demi-human creatures that come at them relentlessly, intent on taking their land and their gods. A young boy named Kai, fighting to defend his village, sustains a life-threatening injury that causes him to regain memories from a past life. Well, there you go. If you're not a guardian bearer, it's like you're playing life on hard mode. Kai's newfound knowledge gives him a new sense of the unfair rule set that governs the world around him. One thing is clear. For those without a god to serve as their guardian, life is a constant struggle for survival. Thus begins the epic tale of a young boy's ascent into a vast world filled with magic, bloodshed, and mystery. So now, has this one had any preview chapters up on J-Novel yet?
Yes, it has.
Did you check any of it out?
I checked everything out that is available at JNC at the moment. Yes, I had a bit of time this week.
Well, you had more time than I did. So what did you think of this one initially?
It's pretty dark. People are dying left and right. And basically, as it says in the blurb, so far he hasn't remembered that much from his previous life. Basically, just some simple concepts like onigiri and cells and something like that. And he has discovered a way to use basic spells like producing flame or healing a bit, not that much more. And it, the chapters out so far end on a bit of a cliffhanger.
Hmm.
Yeah. So.
So is it a bit of a darker? So it is a bit of a darker title then, eh?
Not sure how it's going to continue once he's he has some more powers.
Hmm.
But at the moment, yes, it's basically the town he lives in is constantly attacked by orcs and other demi-humans, as they are called, and
okay.
People have not a high life expectancy because of that. There's not enough food for everyone to go around.
Hmm. Now, his memories of a former life, that is, it is isekai, right? Like, it's not like he's remembering, like, memories of that world. It's he has memories from our world. Is that right?
He just remembers a few things, but he doesn't know exactly where he remembers them from.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that will increase in the future. It's just two chapters.
Yeah. Okay, so Bio has to go. We'll just say that right on this recording. So thanks for hanging out, Bio. I know you wanted to be here just for High School DxD anyway, so it's all good. And all right, so we'll move on to the next J-Novel Club title, one that they announced. And this one sounds a little less dark. The World's Least Interesting Master Swordsman. This one, Sansui Shirokuro, is a young guy with an old man's name, which ends up landing him in tragic circumstances when God snuffs out his life candle after mistaking him for a geezer whose time has passed.
That's harsh.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
Talk about, like, wrong name, wrong place. Now reincarnated into a fantasy world, Sansui is one of the immortals, capable of immense power, as long as he's willing to put centuries of work into achieving it. One day, after 500 years of swinging his sword, his monotonous existence is upended entirely by the appearance of a little baby. His master sends him out into the world to raise the child, and it's there that he meets a haughty young noblewoman and her tomboyish bodyguard. His fighting style may be bland and unpretentious, but the fast-paced mortal world is about to find out just how good even the most hopeless swordsman can get with half a millennium of practice behind him. So this one's got 4 volumes out in Japan. It's still an ongoing series. I am guessing, yes, obviously, comedy based on just that setup alone.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
This isn't, like, the first time I've heard of, like, a character who has either an infinite life set or, like, a reset, who was useless in his previous life, but now that he's had enough time to train, he'll be useful. Like, I've seen this setup before, but...
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed out my level.
I haven't read that yet, but
there
yeah.
Was a, there was
now,
a,
this one is going to have more action than that.
Oh, yeah? Okay. So, now, is it... okay, so it's gonna. So I'm assuming.
It's not quite so slice of life.
Oh, okay. All right. So is it still comedic though?
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah.
Okay. In the beginning, there are a few quite abrupt time jumps. So he arrives in the new world, meets his master, and then jumps to 500 years later. then he travels out in the world with the baby and meets those two that are mentioned in the blurb. Time jump to 3 years later, and he already has his reputation as the strongest swordsman in the kingdom.
Oh, jeez, really?
And that's basically where it starts.
Oh, wow, okay. That's
it's only 2 chapters, 2 parts out on JNC, and what's interesting, they... go to an academy where his mistress is going to study, and he is going there as a bodyguard, and they meet up with another noblewoman who is also a bodyguard, who's also a reincarnated person from Japan.
Oh.
And that person is the more typical isekai protagonist with several powers and that one already has a harem.
Oh, jeez.
While the main character is more like the enlightened monk type.
Okay.
After 500 years in the forest with his master.
Okay, all right. Well, okay, I kind of dig the whole that there is like a very prototypical isekai protagonist in it that can be kind of like a foil for our actual protagonist in this.
I think that one has also been killed by God by accident. I don't remember exactly what happened to him, but it was also an accident, accidentally killed by God.
You know, there's not a lot of faith in God in Japanese people. Like, do you notice that? Like, almost every light novel that has a reincarnation is half the time, and like at least 70% of the time, it's because God screwed up somehow.
Well, it's an easy plot device.
Well, so. Oh yeah, I know. I'm just kidding around. But definitely it's an easy plot device. It's the same thing as getting hit by a truck. Like, come on. I mean, how more mundane and like typical can you get to die as a young person, right? Also, we have, now this one's kind of interesting, although I don't have any information up about it at the moment. So they also, this one's a one shot as far as I know, and it's called the Hitchhiker's Guide to Isekai. Now this is the one that is actually a, now did they self-publish this one or?
I believe they are, because I think this might have been like a doujin or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
I think it's their first foray into that, yeah.
Okay, so this one, what's really funny about it is that as much as it is potentially like a self-published title, this has like the author from Saga of Tanya the Evil, the author of ReZero, the author of, let me just go through, actually I just brought up right now. So Carlo Zen from the Saga of Tanya the Evil, Natsuya Samikawa of Isekai Izakaya Nobu, Hoko Tsuda Yaruki Nashi Eyutan, Tape Nagatsuki from ReZero, Katsui Shibata from Hito Yoru no Nagai Yume, Natsu Hiyuga, Kasuruya no Hitori Goto, and they're all collaborating on this light novel. And yeah, they did it for Comic Con.
That's Pharmacist's Monologue is the last one.
What's that?
The Pharmacist's Monologue is, I think, Kusuriya no Hitori Goto.
Oh, okay. So they did it for Comic Con. And the illustrator for the Saga of Tanya the Evil did the cover for the book. So the synopsis is, these days, everyone and everything seems to get thrown into an isekai. Perhaps you may be the next person to journey through another world. Are you prepared, mentally as well as physically? The six authors have assembled the things you need to bring and the things you need to know in order to allay your worries about transferring or reincarnating into another world. If you study up on their experiences and their stories, then you'll do fine no matter which world you get thrown into. Probably.
I so want that book.
Let this book be the strongest contender for developing the Nobel Isekai Prize. So I mean, like, these are like legit authors and they're basically doing like a doujin. Like, that's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't think Kusuriya no Hitori Goto was an isekai. I thought that was set in a fantasy world. Or basically, or maybe even the Middle Ages of the real world. I've never not read it, but not sure if it's an isekai.
I don't think it's necessarily that all the authors are isekai authors per se, but I mean they're all light novel authors, and you know, I wonder if this is partly the whole drinking party thing. Because
that's a good theory.
Well, because we were talking about this with the whole a sister's all you need, right? When we were talking about how Itsuki and all of them gather together like these light novels, and we're like, I wonder if light novel authors actually do this. And then I think Terrence was telling us the sad story about the author that's like, I don't know anybody, I sit alone in my room, and that he said during like some kind of like Q&A. But I do know that. What was the anime that just came out that had like mashed all of the isekais, like Overlord?
Isekai Quartet?
Yes, Isekai Quartet. Those authors I know got together for like a drinking party when that series premiered because they took pictures and posted them on Instagram.
Yeah, and there are two of those authors are already collaborating on this one.
Yes, exactly. So yes, there's definitely a connection there. I don't think this was necessarily like some publisher putting this together. I really think this is just a bunch of authors that have met each other, know each other, are friends, saying, hey, you wanted to do this thing. So nonetheless, though, I mean, it sounds hilarious. I'm definitely going to check that one out. All right. Next up, we have The Economics of Prophecy. This one is a fantasy and a shockingly isekai story. There's currently two volumes out in Japan. It's still an ongoing series. The Oracle Princess Elfina suddenly announces an ominous prophecy to the people of the Kingdom of Crowhite. However, shunned as she is for being a descendant of rebel blood, her words are heeded by no one. On the other hand, Ricardo, the adopted heir of a peddler, who also happens to be an economics department graduated, reincarnated into this world, attends the Royal Academy to study as a merchant. During an argument with a much more affluent merchant, the one to stick up for him is none other than Elfina. As the distance between them rapidly closes, Ricardo makes full use of his modern knowledge of science, mathematics, and economics to stand against the unknown disaster of prophecy. So it's like it's how to save a kingdom.
Well, from what I read, more or less,
it's not really comparable to a realist hero because protagonist is not really in a position of power in this one. Mm. He's more like a minor merchant.
So essentially,
peddling.
Well, I was going to say, like, just based on the blurb, I mean, it makes it sound like essentially both the two characters that are looking to save this world are having to work from the outside because she's shunned for her bloodline, mm-hmm. and he's basically like this poor merchant, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just read a little bit of it, and like, the initial setup is basically he goes to this academy that's in, I think, a capital city. And it's kind of more so he can peddle his business and set up shop there. And so they're going to attend the academy to sort of gain some intel from those noble children.
The connections.
Okay.
Yeah, because basically back on Earth, he helped his grandfather take care of an apiculture, like the bees.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And in this world, like he sees that his own village has a lot of space and a lot of bees to start a proper business. Mm. So he's like normally like the rich merchant, they go into the forest, take some honey and then sell it at a ridiculous high price to nobles. But then there's a lot of economic terminology and strategy in there, which is nice.
So it's sort of like Spice and Wolf, but an isekai.
Yeah.
But I guess also mixing in that whole prophecy of the end of the world and...
I wouldn't say it's that much economics so far, because producing honey with apiaries, which is more efficient than collecting wild honey, and there's some stuff about pricing, but so far it's not been the focus of the story. But it's only a few chapters out so far, so we can't really tell.
Yeah, but still there's a lot of description whenever he's explaining, like, his strategy. Like, there's a lot more economic explanation than you would find in Realist Hero. Like, Realist Hero, you only have, like, what he's intended to do and was the end result. In this one, you have a little bit more explication, which can be a little bit heavy if you're not into economics that much.
I didn't think it was so heavy, but then I did study economics.
I studied some too, but I was thinking, yeah, if someone who didn't study in economic, it might be a bit heavy, but then again, maybe not.
So the main character talks a bit about how he has plans of reforming the nation's economy in the future. But from what I've seen so far, that is a really far off plan, because he has a lot of groundwork to lay for that one. And also that prophesied catastrophe has to be averted first. And I think, at least for the first, maybe second volume, I think this prophecy will have will be the main plot.
Yeah, the atmosphere is just kind of, it's a little, I'm not saying it's like super oppressive, but it's just having to deal with the nobles and knowing that you're going to have to like sell, to some extent, sell your stuff and figure out you know, how to strategize within, you know, that their foundation. I don't know. It's at the initial setup, it's a little oppressing, like to think like that these commoners are going to have to try to like beat these nobles at their own game. And like the nobles are all kind of every like recess, they're like chatting with each other and they're like, oh, well, that would just be, you know, like a, in our world, that would just be like, you know, common chats and, oh, which girl are you going out with and that kind of stuff. And in this world, it's all, you know, setting up relationships to sell yourself or to gain, you know, advantages.
Yeah, there's a lot of political intrigue at that going on at that academy. But I don't think the setting itself is all that dark. The kingdom is prosperous and there's not really that much poverty. Yeah, so nothing compared to Teagonia.
All righty. Next up from J Novel Club, we have a title called Kobold King. This is a fantasy series. Hey, it's not an isekai, it's just a pure fantasy. There's two volumes currently out in Japan, still ongoing. Gaius Balderas has led a storied life. From humble beginnings, he made a name for himself as a fearsome warrior, a renowned general, advisor to kings, and paramour to princesses. Gaius's very presence commands respect and fear, so much so that everyone is too afraid of him to allow him to reveal his softer side. Gaius gives up everything and finds a chance to start again on the frontier of human civilization, where humans and monsters alike scrabble for existence in a hostile forest. When he runs into a tribe of kobolds, small furry creatures who are fleeing from human aggression, they immediately distrust him and everything about him. Can this gentle giant of a man come to peace with his past and win the friendship of the adorable kobolds?
That one started out quite wholesome, with cute kobolds. They are described as dog-like and can be confused with dogs, and how he comes to the village and befriends the people there and helps them. And yeah, I was wondering what they were going to do with that, because that's never going to be something like slime with empire building, because the kobolds are just too weak for that. And then there were some secondary characters coming in, and then I got a notion of what this series is going to be about. The secondary characters are a lecherous dwarf and a lolly half-elf fighter who wants to bone the main character and the stepdaughter of the main character, or adoptive daughter of the main character, who also wants to bone him.
Oh,
and at that point, I kind of lost interest.
Okay. All right. So, now, comedy?
Not so much yet. No
way. Okay. So, kind of harem-esque slice of life fantasy?
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Well, okay, so that'll be one of those ones that...
The main character is also afflicted by a curse of castration, and they want the two girls plotting how to best remove that.
What the hell?
Don't die, don't die.
Jesus, like, what?
Yeah, it's...
Okay, all right.
Not what I expected from Blur.
I wasn't expecting that either, clearly. All right. Wow. Okay, so this one is going to, I guess, be a big question mark about what it's really about until at least the first volume or two are out. Wow.
I don't think I'm going to wait that long. I'm not going to continue with that.
I feel like a lot of these licenses J-Novel did, they're going to have word of mouth. Whether it's positive or negative, they're going to have some word of mouth because these series are unknown.
It's all new series, so they are mostly, with very few exceptions, their first volumes 2018 or 19.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess the background on it, obviously, is that they teamed up with this Legend Novels, right, which is... Is it a Kodansha imprint? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew it was an imprint of one of the bigger ones. So I'm guessing that it is a newer imprint. That is my gut feeling on it. So my guess is that that's why a lot of these titles are newer and have fewer volumes, is because I guess they, to get their foot in the door and everything on these series, and to hook up with this Legend imprint, they have essentially picked up a lot of these newer books, kind of taking a chance on them, which, you know, this has always been the one good thing about J-Novel Club. J-Novel Club's got a couple good things, but the one thing about J-Novel Club's business practice, the fact that they are ebook primarily first, really has allowed them to take a chance on a bunch of titles over the years that nobody knew anything about, or, you know, people thought were risky or whatever. Remember how we all responded to J.K. Haru as a sex worker in Another World last time, right? And then now it's done well enough that they have it out in print. I mean, go figure. I think that's a lot of these announcements that I'm looking at for Anime New York City. When I was looking through them, and I was the same as you with Mirage. I was, you know, doing just the little basic research, like what's the Japanese title, how many volumes are out, where, you know, stuff like that. That was my gut instinct. I was kind of like, all right, this is a, let's break into a new publisher. Let's, you know, we're going to launch this new imprint that we will talk about in a few minutes. And instead of trying to go for like the super stupid A-list titles and only be able to release one or two, we're going to go for these newer series that don't have as much, you know, push behind them, but we can license five or six titles right out of the gate.
And I think it's a good strategy because of those 14 titles, I already decided I'm going to follow at least four of them, maybe two more. So,
Well, you know, it has allowed J-Novel Club to have a fairly, even though they do have a lot of isekai titles, they do still have a pretty diverse range of titles and, you know, diverse feels to their titles and stuff like that. And they've been allowed to put books out. It's allowed them to put out books that are higher risk. And I mean, a lot of them have had very high return. I mean, remember Ari Furuta, I'd never heard of it when J-Novel Club licensed it. Yeah. Now it's had an anime, it's this huge title and everything else.
Well, like Realist Hero, that was one of their major... I think that was the one that really made it them think, yes, we can take a chance on titles because that's sold so well.
So well, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And that's, so I think that that's where they are able to do those things and bring out these books that really a lot of other publishers wouldn't touch because they're so committed to print. I actually just finished Other Side Picnic, and I'm going to be doing a review on that. So I won't spoil my review because I want people to watch my videos. but man, I'll tell you, it was a good book. But I doubt that that book would have gotten licensed by anybody else. So in any case, we're diverging a little bit. But yeah, I think as you listen to these titles and hear that there's only one or two out, I think it's mainly because there a lot of these licenses are from this newer publisher imprint. So they don't have a lot of stuff that's longer running. So, and I mean, it's good for J Novel, right? They get their foot in the door with somebody and right off the bat. And if this publisher starts hitting out big titles, J Novel Club's lined up to take them, right? All right. So next up we have Outer Ragna. This one, again, it's one of the Legend Novels ones. There are only two volumes out. It is ongoing. Potato Starch. Still, I'm never going to be able to read that seriously. A live streamer who's gaining popularity for his excitable attitude and witty banter has begun streaming Dragon Demon RPG DX, a game with a cult following known for its extreme difficulty and unreasonable systems. Only masochists would play it. Meanwhile, in the world of the game, a fierce war between humans, elves, and vampires is reaching its bloody peak. The humans, lacking in magic, were forced into a defensive battle until a savior appeared. Wielding a battle axe, a young girl named Kuroi stepped forth to oppose both enemy armies. Her heroic efforts earned her the names Dragon Slayer and Killer of Demons. Thanks to Kuroi, a girl loved by God, humans counterattack. Potato Starch is just a video game player. He dives into this world hoping to forget the tiring real world. But through an unexpected series of events, he ends up almost possessing Kuroi. As he reaches the game's climax, Kuroi discovers a mysterious power, and Potato Starch's fate is changed forever.
That sounds weird.
Yeah.
So far, from the parts that are out so far, I don't really know how exact the translation of that is. Because so far, you have two parts of the story. One is Potato Starch doing a stream and explaining to his viewers what he's doing with the character and so on. And then you have another stream of narration from the perspective of the character, of the girl. And so far, neither is she aware that she's a character in a computer game, nor is he aware that his character has any kind of sentience.
Hmm. Yeah,
maybe that's later stuff, but so far there's nothing like that.
Like, it sounded good up to the possession part. Like, I'm not sure if it's like Sele Gensoki or if it's like it just takes over.
Yeah,
or...
I'm a little confused at this point. I read the first part that was out, and there's no... It says almost possession, or yeah. So, like, I don't know how that's going to work later. But for now, basically, there's the stream, and then there's the NPCs kind of seeing this character interacting in the world, and that is kind of the entertainment, at least in the early going, in that first part, is seeing them, like, watch this character, like, jump over logs to increase their agility, and they're like, what the hell are you doing? You're just wearing yourself out. Like, they're thinking in realistic terms, like, you're doing ridiculous stuff, but for the character... That those are the mini games you're supposed to do to increase your stamina and stuff. So, so that was kind of entertaining. There's also another part where they get the drop on an enemy, and the way they do it is like ridiculous, but it would make sense from a game perspective. Yeah.
So I think, you know what, I kind of wonder if this whole he ends up almost possessing part, I kind of wonder if that is a trick of translation, that they are trying to, they are basically saying that they are going to eventually realize that one is the player and one is the played. Well, I think maybe. That, I wonder if that's what they mean.
There might be a plot twist like that in the future, but so far it's just one perspective of the streamer and one perspective of the people in the game watching the player character, and yeah, nothing much else. There's also there's not that much out yet. There's just been the first fight against a couple of orcs or something like that.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, like, I was more interested in it if it does stay this way, but maybe if the player character, like, realized, I don't know how they could do it other than getting isekai'd in there, but if they could realize that they're affecting a world, like an actual world, through the game, and I don't, again, maybe that's why they're gonna get somewhat possessing the other character.
Well, it could be like the girl, she tries to do whatever she's doing, like stopping the wars and stuff. But maybe if she hears like the player in her head, like, and he gives her advice from what he sees over top, like, it might be able to be interesting.
Almost like an overlapping of consciousness or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, dual consciousness, you speak to your inner self, who is like above, checking from a bird view. Like,
okay, I see what you're saying.
I think they said there's no pausing in the game either. So even when you quit out of the game, I think it's a persistent world. So I don't know if your character just sits there or sleeps while you're not there. I think that's the case. So, yeah, that can be interesting.
Yeah, the character mentions that he's preparing for his recording sessions with snacks and drinks and a bottle.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Well, you know what? It certainly sounds like it has kind of an interesting premise, and I am just intrigued alone by the description of people seeing the actions of a player character in that world and how they would be interpreted. Because, yeah, like you said, things that make sense when we play a game, if you actually saw a person doing that in real life, you'd be like, you are a nut job.
Probably one series I'm going to put on the back burner for now and wait until I get a summary for the whole first volume and see where it's going to go before I read.
Yeah, because it sounds like...
Yeah, I might pick up the first one.
It sounds like the stuff in the description might not happen until either like midway through or way later in that first volume. So yeah, it might be good to wait.
All right. Next up from J Novel Club, we have a title called Her Majesty's Swarm. This one, again, is one of the legend novels. This has three volumes, so it's actually got a little bit more than most of the other ones. Three volumes out in Japan, still ongoing. Our protagonist is a college student who enjoys playing as the evil-aligned faction Arachnia in her favorite real-time strategy game. One day, she finds herself in a world similar to the one in the game. Additionally, her body is now that of a 14-year-old girl. Why do they do... Okay, never mind. While things are a bit different from how they were in the game, one element has remained the same. She is the leader of the Arachnia. The insects under her control, collectively known as the Swarm, praise her and implore her to lead them to victory. In order to survive, she raises her swarm and forms friendly relations with the elves of the neighboring forest. But after a slaver traveling through the forest murders one of her swarm, and the nearby kingdom's knights burn down the elven village and massacre its people, she prepares to launch her counterattacks in the name of revenge. However, revenge is merely a pretense for attacking the countries of this world. Her command is masterful and severe as one who has played the game in real life.
Well, reminds me of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, the game she played is StarCraft, the Arachnia are the Zerg, and she's Kerrigan.
yeah.
They changed the names so Must they didn't have to pay royalties to Blizzard. It's fun to read so far, but my biggest fear is that she's going to go the way of Overlord sooner than later.
The initial setup is like, it's very similar to Overlord Volume 1. So it involves someone transported to another world to act as a ruler of a kingdom, or a legion of soldiers in this case, not really a kingdom.
She's not that overpowered in the beginning.
And then they have the NPC allies who also get isekai'd to this new world. It's not the game world. It's this brand new world. So again, kind of like Overlord, where you're stuck in this new world. And then the hero gets in good with the village early on, tries to get in good with the village. Similar to Overlord, it involves, you know, like a boy and a girl character that live in the village that they befriend to some extent by saving them. And then the slow descent into potential madness or villainy. Now, I haven't read part four yet, but yeah, like, this character is getting basically infected by their swarm, the hive mind of the swarm. So it sounds like their humanity is kind of lessening as time goes on. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do. They know that the swarm doesn't want to just be like these peaceful, you know, we'll trade and survive. They don't want that. They want to dominate. They want victory. They chant that, you know, constantly.
But they are not quite sure what victory entails. So the only thing she can get out of the swarm is that they want her to lead mm-hmm. them to victory, but not victory over what and over whom.
Yeah, but she thinks she's misusing them, and so she thinks that she at some point has to go on like a conquest. Or, you know, destroy a town or village. Now, so far, everybody that she's attacked or killed has been, you know, like heinous criminals, you know, slavers or things like that. But, yeah, again, I think you were talking about it, Mirage. Like, I think it will be interesting to see where this goes and if she does stay on, like, the right path or if she just becomes a huge, heinous villain herself.
Interesting.
One more thing, given that the premise is supposed to be a real-time strategy game, there's not that much strategy involved so far. she does use her lurker units. I'm not sure, they're called lurkers in StarCraft, I'm not quite remember how they're called there, to attack enemies from beneath, but that's about it. Maybe there will be more variety in her choice of units later on. And a bit, one thing that is a bit confusing is that each individual unit is referred to as a swarm. Normally, a swarm would be a couple of units together, but here every unit is called a swarm. That threw me a bit for the first few times.
It should be noted this one is pretty violent. Like, even when a character doesn't die, like, they're talking about their mouth getting jarred open by the swarm. And, yeah, there's some blood and guts in this one, so.
Yeah, there's one character getting some kind of brain infestation bug so he can be controlled.
Oh. I gotta be honest, I am not a
he's a slaver, so he earned it.
Still, I'm not a fan of bugs, I don't know. the second I saw big spiders on the cover, I was kind of like, that might not be for me. Anyway.
I think I've at least get the first one or two volumes to see where it's going to go, and like Overlord, if it goes too far off the path that I can stomach, I'll drop it.
Alrighty. Okay, so next up, and this is sort of the last of the J-Novel clubs before we get into their new imprint, and that is Isekai Rebuilding Project. This one has two volumes out in Japan. Have you ever wondered what happens after peace is restored in a fantasy world? What happens beyond the final page of an isekai light novel? Eiji, a 30-year-old Japanese city clerk with a thoroughly average life and a fiancé, had not. He, too, answers a call to be transported to a fantasy world, but not as a hero. This fantasy world, having already been saved by a hero, was about to collapse for another reason entirely, thanks to that hero, who was summoned from Japan. Eiji is tasked with restoring the fantasy world to its authentic form, how it was before it was infected with the technology, ideology, and societal concepts of modern-day Japan.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about earlier when I said you shouldn't buy a book just because the cover looks fancy. two main things I don't like about it. One is it has a secondary character, that's the goddess that summoned him. She accompanies him in the form of a small dragon, and she makes some pretty obscure jokes, in-jokes, references, that 80% of those I didn't get, probably because they are something only a Japanese person would get. And the other thing is the high-handed tone it takes with its readers. So it makes reference to some isekai tropes and how those tropes are not realistic, like in a real medieval world, people look older than they are because the life is so harsh. And it's not doing that in a way like, hey, did you know in isekai they are always doing that and that, and isn't it funny? And in a real world, it wouldn't work like that. In this novel, it's more like, hey, in a isekai they are always doing things like that and that, and that's obviously stupid. How could you ever believe that?
I get what you're saying. So it's like it talks down to the audience, basically.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's too bad to hear, though, because I mean, it wasn't even just the cover itself. The premise...
Yeah, but a caveat, it's only two parts out. Maybe it's not so bad, so this is the... that's the impression I got from the first two parts.
Okay.
So,
all right. Did you get a chance to check it out, Terrence, at all?
I did not yet. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, the description, it sounds interesting. Like, that last line, that he's going to try to reverse the changes to the isekai. Is that, that's kind of the premise? Like, that sounds, yeah.
Basically, I'm not sure where it's going to go in the future. The first problem he encounters when he enters the first city is that some citizens are suffering from a food deficiency because the hero introduced rice, and that doesn't have enough vitamin B, and the diet change negatively affected the people. Beriberi is the illness. I remember that Abby Leverage did a similar subplot in one of the later volumes, but there it was more for fun, and here it's more serious. But it's still not really a problem I'd like to read another, the kind of problem I'd like to read a whole series. Light novel series about.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I guess we'll wait and see what happens with this one. But yeah, I said, like I said, it's just, that's too bad, because the premise sounds great, and the covers, you're right, exactly. The covers looks beautiful. I had some hopes for that one. But you never know, like you said, when the full book is out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, I can get that. My only thing that I have, and like, it's just because of how it was such a hot button topic, like the last year or so. I'm just like, oh my God, if he has to reinstate slavery, I'm going to be like, oh God, please no. Anyway, because when it was like, you know, societal changes and stuff, I was like, oh, which way are they going to go with that? But oh well. Okay. Now we come to the new imprint that J Novel Club announced, and that is J Novel Club Heart. Aww. They have a heart. This is a shoujo imprint for J Novel Club, which I don't know, maybe we want to talk a little bit just about that in general, but really, it's only been a year or so since J Novel Club started putting out titles that we could really legitimately say were shoujo. Mm-hmm. And now they're launching a whole imprint, and there are 5 titles coming out under that imprint right away. And they're going to be moving My Life as a Villainess over to that imprint. Like, shoujo must have done well.
I think only the print edition.
Okay, well,
the ebook edition is still, maybe because they won't. Can't change it after the fact, but the print ebook edition is still going to go under the
Okay, well.
Is Sexile is that considered one too, or no?
No, I don't think that wasn't technically considered a shoujo title. That one, the first one that I think that was like really legit shoujo was that one. What was it? It may be my fault that my husband has the head of a beast or whatever. Right? Because, I mean, that one was legit, like, straight-ahead Beauty and the Beast romance-type story. Like, it was very shoujo. Even My Next Life as a Villainess, I would say, kind of straddles the line between being shoujo and not quite shoujo, like, you know what I mean? It's more, it's definitely one. Yeah, like I think there it has more of a slightly more universal appeal. It's definitely not a shounen, a shonen series, but yeah, I kind of feel like it straddles the line a little bit because
comedy always works for both genders.
Yeah, well, generally, yeah, exactly. That's a very good point, and very true.
I think this one we'll talk about. I think it kind of follows in that vein, that like Baccarina vein.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, this. Yeah. The one first one out of there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I have to admit I was a little put out by the title, the name J Novel Club Heart. I don't know.
Well, I gotta be honest, I thought it was gonna be, when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, is this gonna be the romantic comedy? Like, is this gonna be that? Is this gonna be that imprint? And then, you know, it was shoujo, which is fine, but it, you know, I would have loved if it were their first foray into rom-com.
Yeah, but you don't really need an imprint to do rom-com. I mean, it caters to their, customer base that they already have. So.
But it does, but that depends on, like, there's fantasy rom-com and then there's, like, real-life rom-com. Sure, it would cater to a similar base, but it would have been nice to get more of that because they haven't licensed anything that is, like, real-life rom-com, no fantasy element yet. But,
I kind of, well, now here's my thing, and I am just curious, and I have no answer for it, and I haven't bothered Sam about it because he's a busy guy. But the one thing that I wondered when I was going through this, I'm like, why are you launching a shoujo imprint? Like, why can you not just release shoujo titles under J Novel Club? Like, I just don't know the thinking.
Why is anybody launching different imprints? That's, you could theoretically every publisher could launch all their titles under the same imprint.
Well, yeah.
But technically, like, I guess the reason that if you're a girl that's really into shoujo, you just go to the Genoval Club art site, you have everything you want. You don't have to go do a selection throughout everything that's in Genoval Club. You go there, you have everything that's shoujo.
I like it. Like, I think it makes sense. It's kind of similar to in Japan. In Japan, you have these megalith companies like Kadokawa, and then they have their labels under them. And then you know, okay, if it's in this label, it's for adults. If it's in this label, it's for girls. If it's in this label, it's for young boys.
You don't even know always. I think Hobby Japan, they have two inputs. One is HJ novels and one is HJ books. And I'm not quite sure what the difference between the two of them is. And there are several examples like that where I don't even know why one is in this imprint and one is in the other. In this case, it's obvious. So
I think it's like one is Tankobon and one is Bunkobon, and then they just it doesn't really matter that what.
In some cases, yes, but that HJ example, that's just two different kinds of light novels.
Well, I guess, like I said, I guess you know what it is that because J-Novel Club has been around for a couple of years now, and I guess to me, I kind of thought, I just didn't see what the point was. But I guess, you know, as you guys are talking and stuff, and particularly what you were saying, Jean-Luc, as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking, you know, I guess, you know, the truth is, the light novel market as it's existed since about 2014 has been so driven as being male-centric. Maybe this is like, maybe it's not just even a matter of convenience. Maybe this is like a statement of J-Novel saying, hey, we are shoujo friendly. We are, friendly to other, you know, segments aside from teenage into, you know, middle-aged men. And like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's more of a statement than it is necessarily any kind of a necessity or even just a convenience. It's just more of a being able to say, hey, we totally are supportive of shoujo. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, next year they announce, like, a more adult imprint, like, with more serious and borderline maybe anti-ish stuff.
Well, you know what? When you say that, I kind of think you're right. Like, J-Novel Club does have, like J.K. Haru, they do have titles that probably shouldn't exist right alongside a lot of their other books, right? You're probably right, like that. So, I mean, maybe that's something Sam's looking at. Maybe this is an experiment, you know, to see how having a different label goes. And that maybe we will see more diversification of J-Novel Club as they go along, such as like Kodansha does or Kadokawa does. Maybe we'll see this. Maybe this is the first step. I don't know. It would be interesting if they did, like, when Sam posted that he had come from a trademark, from the trademark office, I thought he was going to announce an original English light novels line. I thought that's what I thought he was registering, but no, it's the shoujo line. And again, I think, I know that was my initial thinking was like, why do you need a shoujo line, Sam? Why don't you just release this stuff under J-Novel? But you guys all have good points, and I can kind of see it, I guess, from another point of view too. So,
and at the end of the day, it's all together with all the rest of the J-Novel titles on the site. I don't know if something will change in the future, if it'll open up its own portal, but yeah, we'll find out later.
I don't see him doing that. I mean, he didn't do that when he launched the manga. He still hasn't done it, even though they've added like a number more. So I don't know. Sam's a pretty smart guy. He's certainly built this company up from pretty much nothing. So, He seems to know what he's doing in this regard. So, but you know what? Somebody pointed out to me online, and a true story. I mean, Cross Infinite World has been around for a while now, and they've been very heavily shoujo focused. So definitely, there's a market for it. So, I guess this is J Novel Club making its stand, right? So let's get to the titles. First up, we've got Tear Moon Empire. This one has two volumes currently in Japan. It is an ongoing series. Surrounded by the hate-filled gazes of her people, the selfish princess of the fallen Tear Moon Empire, Mia, takes one last look at the bleeding sun before the guillotine blade falls, only to wake up as a 12-year-old. With time rewound and a second chance at life dropped into her lap, she sets out to right the countless wrongs that plague the ailing empire. Corrupt governance? Check. Border troubles? Check. Natural calamities and economic strife? Check. My, seems like a lot of work. Hard work and Mia don't really mix. So she seeks out the aid of others, starting with her loyal maid Anne and the brilliant minister Ludwig. Together, they strive day and night to restore the empire. Little by little, their tireless efforts begin to change the course of history, pushing the whole of the continent toward a new future. And why did the selfish princess have a change of heart, you ask? Simple. She didn't. She's just terrified of the guillotine. They hurt like hell, and Mia hates pain more than work. Lazy, selfish, and a complete coward, the ill-equipped princess of the Tear Moon Empire, armed with memories of her past life and a diary from the future, tries to avoid dying at the guillotine again and changes the very course of history in the process.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this one I was positively surprised by.
Oh, good.
At first, I was having doubts whether I would like the protagonist, because the blurb says she's really lazy and didn't really change, but you don't really get that impression when you're reading the book. She is kind of selfish sometimes, but not in a bad way. She still treats her subordinates quite well, and it's not as bad as it's made out to be in the summary.
Yeah, she spent like 4 years in the dungeon. Like, yeah, the summary makes it seem like, oh, nothing changed her. I mean, certainly she's still her personality. Like, when a cake gets dropped at one point, she's like, she's trying to console the maid that dropped it. And then she finds out, oh, that was the last cake. Oh, and then she, you know, cusses her out for dropping it. But you know, it's very comedic, you know. It's not like she's, at the end of the day, I think she has changed, and you'll kind of see it with that maid in particular when she interacts with her. But yeah, I would say she hasn't changed at all, like the description is trying to say. She definitely went through some stuff.
She has changed a lot, yeah. And she's still at one point she's bringing sweets to the family of the maid, and she only has 8 of them, and then she comes into the house and oh god, she has so many sisters that there won't be any left for me, and but that's not really the end of the world. Anybody is allowed to have some kind of greed for something like that. And basically, if you like Baccarina, then you will like this one.
Yeah, okay. She's transported back in time, so she's trying to avoid the bad ending, like Baccarina.
Right.
And yeah, again, it's about gathering subordinates. It's about changing her attitude and trying new things, because in the diary that she keeps, the bloody diary from when she got her head chopped off. It changes as she you know, gains these alliances and does different stuff.
Okay. That's cool.
So it rewrites itself. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I'm not quite sure how it's going to continue further on,
yeah.
Because so far she has built a hospital for the poor and given to charity and all kinds of stuff. So I'm not sure if the kingdom would crumble at this point, if she would still be the one to go to the guillotine.
Yeah, maybe it'll change like her end. Maybe instead of the guillotine, there'll be like opposing empires coming in that she can't, you know, take out. Like I think they could change maybe the ending, but still.
Maybe,
still a bad
because
end.
As it's right now, I think she should pretty much have avoided that fate.
Yeah.
It's if there's one difference to Baccarina, then it's the tone is quite serious. In Baccarina, everyone is happy and fluffy, and all the dangers more or less are in her imagination. And here, the kingdom is really at the brink of crumbling, so the stakes are higher.
Mm. Okay, all right.
And obviously, she was in a real danger of being decapitated if she continued the way she had been. But basically, they are quite similar stories. So that's one of the ones I'm definitely going to continue to read.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention really quickly. She was 20 when she was killed. And I think she goes back at age 11, so they'll probably.
Well, so I think it's a 12. So that's
okay.
Well,
12.
8 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, interesting. All right. Okay, so next up under the J Novel Club Heart imprint, we have "I Refuse to Be Your Enemy." This one has 6 volumes currently out in Japan. Kiara was the adopted daughter of the Earl. She was adopted to become the queen's lady-in-waiting, but in order to become one, she had to marry a person 2 times older than her. In her despair, the young girl's memories of a previous life appeared in her head. She then remembered about the game that she had played many times. Farugia. What is it? Farugia
Okokusenki. Okokusenki.
Okay. And about the enemy witch that will appear. If I married, then I will have the exact same name as that enemy witch. She tried to escape from the detestable marriage and the fate of dying as an enemy character. In doing so, on the carriage that had allowed her to secretly leave were people who seemed familiar. Currently, I am heading to the kingdom.
Yeah, the other J Novel Hearts titles were not yet available as pre-pubs, so I can't say more about those.
Mm. Okay. Well, this one, it's again, I get a running theme with the J Novel Heart titles, the whole I am destined for a bad end, I must avoid the bad end. Because they're moving Baccarina over, that Tear Moon Empire, and now this one, I Refuse to Be Your Enemy.
Yeah, I think the others are a bit different.
Well, I get that, but I'm just saying that there is that same idea that this one, I think, sounds actually more like Baccarina than I would say Tear Moon Empire did. Because it's that whole, she has the memory of, like, an Otome game that she was playing, because this is an isekai, obviously, and that she became the enemy. So, yeah. Next up, The White Cat's Revenge as Plotted from the Dragon King's Lap. You just gotta love that title, you know.
Did they also? Was it J Novel Club that licensed the Cat Behemoth one?
No, that was Yenon.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Yenon. They actually, one of the ones comes out early next year. All right, The White Cat's Revenge is Plotted from the Dragon King's Lap. This one is an isekai fantasy, has 5 volumes currently in Japan, as an ongoing series. 19-year-old Ruri Morikawa gets wrangled into a messy situation when her selfish childhood friend strands her in another world. To make matters worse, a mysterious conspiracy then gets her abandoned in a perilous forest. Through an unexpected turn of events, she comes into possession of a mystical bracelet that allows her to transform into a white cat. Now that she's in the land of the Dragon King, she must hide the fact that she's human, which means spending her days as a little white cat for the time being. But how will she exact her much-earned revenge against those who've wronged her while stuck in the form of a small, fluffy, cuddly kitty cat?
Yeah, that one might also be interesting. One comment, I'm not 100% sure if this is really ongoing, because the last volume came out in July 2018.
Okay, so it might be over.
Might be on hiatus.
One thing I gotta say is that summary didn't really do good, and it's kind of, I almost wonder if it's mistranslated or something, because the two girls get isekai'd together, and so it's the best frenemy that kind of like screws the main character over, and she's gotta run away, and so, yeah, so it's kind of this... I'd almost like to say like spy versus spy, this kind of antagonism between them, even though one of them's like a total airhead and doesn't realize that she's causing the main character just a lot of pain. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So have you read some of this then, Kyle?
Oh yeah. I gotten pretty far in it.
Oh really?
Yeah. And so the main character, she's got to run away from the kingdom that summoned her. She finds a magic ring that turns her into a cat. And so she uses that to, help escape. And so she wanders into the Dragon King's kingdom as the cat. And he ends up falling in love with that form of hers, not romantically, but, just as a pet.
Like a pet, yeah.
Yeah, and so she's stuck in that form because she doesn't want to, betray his trust that he has in his cat.
Now, is he actually a dragon, or is he just, like, a dude called the Dragon King?
He's a dude called the Dragon King.
Okay. Because when I read the summary and it said that she couldn't reveal that she was human, I thought, oh, well, maybe he's a dragon, like, legit. I'm just having visions of, like, this massive dragon, like, petting a little kitty.
That's also what I thought.
All right. So is it more of, like, a comedy then, Kyle?
Yeah, it's definitely comedy, because, watching the Dragon King spaz out because he's got a fluffy cat he gets to pet and all kinds of other business that's going on.
All right. Next up is The Tales of Marielle Clarac. This one... Okay, this one has 6 volumes out in Japan. I think it's still ongoing because it looks like the most recent one just came out in November of this year. As a plain, unassuming noble's daughter, Marielle doesn't stand out in high society. Imagine her surprise when she receives a marriage proposal from the sought-after Simeon, second in command of the Royal Order of Knights. Simeon, the heir to an earldom, is highly accomplished in scholarly and military arts, and he's gorgeous. So why did he propose to such an unremarkable noblewoman? Despite being a target of envy and scorn, Marielle is happy. After all, Simeon seems to be exactly her type, a dashingly handsome man with glasses who appears gentle on the outside, but who has a dark and scheming side. Welcome to Marielle's world, where people aren't always what they seem, and a prim, proper exterior can hide the heart of a sly and devious fangirl.
Yeah. That one seems more like a shoujo type.
I love it. So is this going to be that one where it's like, she seems like she's such a good little girl, but she's actually like a total deviant?
Or maybe the suitor is secretly an asshole or something like that?
Well,
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. That's, but wow, that summary though. That's great.
Yeah, I'm getting some Mr. and Mrs. Smith vibes from this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, it just kind of sounds like they're, you know, whenever they're together, they pretend to be, you know, this one face. And then when they're apart, they're like completely opposite. They're both schemers, I guess.
It's interesting that these shoujo titles so far seem a little bit more interesting and engaging than the other titles. maybe that's the problem. We've all just been starved for shoujo. That's what it is. Okay, so the last one for the J Novel Club Heart line is called The Bibliophile Princess. This one has 5 volumes. The most recent one came out in July of 2019, so it looks like it could be still an ongoing. When book-loving lady Eliana spots Prince Christopher, her betrothed in name only, consorting with another noble lady, she realizes that the recent rumors must be true. The prince has someone he truly loves, which means the annulment of their engagement is both inevitable and fast approaching. What she doesn't realize is that this is merely a surface ripple, one of many where the truth runs deep in a conspiracy surpassing her imagination.
Also something that is quite open to interpretation.
Yeah. It really doesn't tell you very much about the book at all. And why is it called The Bibliophile Princess? Just because she likes books? Like, I'm hoping the book thing plays into it somehow.
Ascendance of the Bookworm 2.0.
Well, that's what I thought it was the first time I saw that. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, oh, okay, so they got Ascendance of a Bookworm. Now they've got to get the Bibliophile Princess.
Mine has become a princess now.
Well, this one's not an isekai. It's just a pure fantasy. So kind of that, yeah, that's interesting. I wonder what is the truth that runs deep and what are the conspiracies. This one actually has me curious, I have to admit. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Once you do a review, you can tell us.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, I'll be honest. There are quite a number of these J Novel Club Heart titles I would be very interested in checking out, honestly. Yeah, I think some of them sound pretty good. So
you can give them to your wife and have her do a review.
You know, honestly, my wife is probably a lot more into the violence and gore than I am. My wife is not the girly shoujo type. She is much more the gritty, dark, you know, underbelly of magic kind of book readers.
Yeah, but have her do the Tegonia review.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Okay, so that is it for all of the licenses. I mean, I shouldn't say that's it, because that's actually quite a lot. Those who are listening, feel free to leave in the comments, what are you looking forward to? What titles have got you all interested and can't wait till they come available? In the meantime, we'll be coming back in our next episode, which will not be only a week away from this one, because, you know, that's getting a little crazy, this schedule. Plus, I have to read another book before we have our next podcast. And that'll be J.K. Haru is a Sex Worker in Another World, our long-touted deep dive on probably one of the more controversial novels that J Novel Club has in their roster. and hopefully we can do it some justice. Do it some justice with Justice Arstone. Anyway, never mind. apparently I'm starting to get delirious. In any case, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. And to you listeners, as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you in the next one. And yes, it will be full of spoilers, so don't listen if you don't want to be spoiled. And there you go. Until then, bye-bye for now.
For show notes and related links, visit lightnovelpodcast.com.